attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just gonna wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into the show. Second hour on this Friday, February 27, 2026 edition. Your Defending Fathers, Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us every second hour of our Friday shows, Pastor Chatfield. And he has a history lesson set up for us today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. We are talking about the Great Depression, kind of moving through American history. Here, as you remember, the United States entered World War I, war to end all wars, as Woodrow Wilson had said, and we entered it in 1917. Ironically, in 1916, his campaign slogan was, he kept us out of war. Nevertheless, we went to war, helped the Allies win. Woodrow Wilson went to the Treaty of Versailles, went to Versailles where they negotiated the treaty, the Big Four, Orlando from Italy, Woodrow Wilson from the United States, Clemenceau from France, and George from United Kingdom. And they punished, punished Germany and made them take the war guilt clause, put the blame on Germany, made Germany promise to pay for the war, and it really kind of stunk Germany. When Wilson came back with the treaty, the 14th point, which was forming a League of Nations, the United States Senate rejected it, led by Senator Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts. It was rejected. And the whole country at that point basically said, we've had enough. Had enough of idealism, utopianism. Let's return to normalcy. That was the campaign slogan of Hardin. And return to normalcy. And he had some scandals, but then his vice president, Calvin Coolidge, his famous saying was, the business of America is business, and he was followed by another Republican, Herbert Hoover. The 1920s were known as the Roaring Twenties. A lot of fads. I told the kids about flag sitting. People would put chairs on flags, and it was a big fad. Get a chair, take it up to a flagpole and sit there for a month or, you know, whatever. It's amazing. Actually, it did happen. A lot of different fads. The stock market was booming. Everything was expanding. We thought that we were going to have prosperity forever. There was an awful lot. The stock market was going up and up and up. It went so far up that it was beyond the worth of the stock. People were believing that this economic expansion or boom, if you want to call it, bubble, would go on forever. But it didn't. It doesn't. It never does. In history, we have known throughout our entire history, there, you know, in the economy runs in patterns and swings. It always has. Things go up, things go down. You hope that they go up more than down, and that's been generally true with the stock market over the, you know, centuries now. It generally goes up, but it does take downturns. And I'm going to talk about, you know, kind of introduce you to that. The big bubble bursted. It was called Black Tuesday, October 29th, 1929, when the stock market crashed. It just went down. And all the exuberance and confidence, and everybody was borrowing money to buy stocks, to sell stocks, then pay back their loan. It's called buying on speculation. We'll talk about that and what eventually ended that Great Depression.
Excellent. Great spot for a break. Word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
This is Justin Michael. From day one, our campaign has been about one thing: people, the families, workers, veterans, small business owners, and communities that make Northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula home. I'm running because too many people in Washington have forgotten who they serve. I've spent my life advocating for others, listening to their stories, and fighting for solutions that put people first. Our district deserves a representative who shows up, cares, and follows through on what they say they're going to do. It's time to start putting Americans first and Michigans first. Paid for by Justin Michael for Congress.
Hi, my name is Monica Yatuma. I've spent my career in the private sector, fixing broken systems and delivering real results. When there was waste, I cut it. When there was failure, I demanded accountability. And when problems got tough, I didn't back down. Now I'm running for Secretary of State to bring integrity, efficiency, and common sense back to Michigan government and to protect the trust in our elections that voters deserve. I'm experienced and I know how to get things done. My promise to you is conservative leadership that you can trust. This message has been paid for by Monica Yatuma for Michigan.
Hear ye, citizens of Northern Michigan. Your Royal Chariot deserves the finest care. From noble new tires to auto repairs, Royal Tire has decreed smoother travels for all.
Alas, my trusty steed hath a flat
and terrible brakes.
Fear not, fair knight. At Royal Tire of Petoskey, we fix flats, tame brakes, quell noisy exhausts, and keep your kingdom, car, roadworthy. All at prices that won't raid your royal treasury. Royal Tire and Auto Repair of Petoskey, where every driver is treated like royalty.
A book by Rick Randall, Road Trip, the Good Words book for success. Good words that both young and old alike need to add to their vocabulary to impact their thoughts, emotions, behavior, and ultimately their reality in life. Road Trip's Good Words, Positive Thinking, and Daily Pep Talk will improve your attitude, impress everyone you come in contact with, and lead to a better, happier, more fulfilling life. Get your copy at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. Pass the positive. Road Trip, the Good Words book by Rick Randall.
Curtis Gunsmith in Petoskey wants to ask you a question. Have you exercised your Second Amendment rights lately? Well, if you haven't, get on over to Curtis Gunsmith in Petoskey and talk to the old gun doctor about purchasing your next firearm, whether that be a concealed carry firearm or maybe an AR-15, perhaps an AK-47, or even just an old lever action. The gun doctor also works on every kind of firearm, except maybe an Abrams tank. So you know your baby's in good hands. Curtis Gunsmith. Call 231-838-5571.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Pastor Chatfield, a point of clarification for your history professor brain. After Woodrow Wilson, who became president and then who was president during the Great Depression, that crash you talked about, October 29, 1929. What was the presidential succession after Woodrow Wilson?
Harding followed Wilson, and then Coolidge, Calvin Coolidge, and then Herbert Hoover. He was elected in 1928. So the three Republicans.
It was Hoover, and he was a Republican as well, correct?
Yes, yes. And as is the state of things, he gets blamed for the Depression. He gets blamed. And economists will probably say this, if anybody's out there cares about this stuff. They would say that the stock market crash isn't the cause of the Depression. It might mark the beginning of it, but there were other things happening. Detachment from reality. Let me give you a statement by Herbert Hoover. And this should make us be sober. He said this during the campaign in 1928. He said, "We in America today are nearer to the final triumph over poverty than ever before in the history of any land." I mean, within just a few years, there were Hoovervilles all over the place. There was just in Washington, D.C., and all over a Hooverville is what they called a village where homeless people went because they'd lost their house, and they took cardboard and tin and made up what best they could, and they lived in abject poverty, and there were soup lines. And literally, you'd stand in line to get a bowl of soup. Mm. Children were hungry. And there were a lot of causes of this, and I'm going to try to walk you through this. First of all, overproduction, overconfidence. Okay, so factories are making things, and sales are up, and we can make more. Let's make more. And thinking that the more you make, the more you will sell. Well, that's not always true. You got to have some discernment and wisdom to know how much you should make, because if you make more than you can sell, and you have high things in storage, ready to sell, but nobody's buying, now you're in trouble. So overproduction, and they thought that the boom would go on forever. Overuse of credit. And back in this one, they called this buying on the margin. What does that mean? That would mean that an investor or buyer would paid only a part of the purchase of a stock in cash. The rest they borrow. For instance, you go to a bank, you borrow money, take that money, or for any lender, take the money and then buy stock with it, believing, because it's been going on for the last 10 years, it's going to go up and up and up, and then you'll turn around quickly, sell your stock with a great profit, take the money, go back, and pay your loan off, and walk away with a handy profit. Now that's, if it works, I suppose that's okay. But if it doesn't work, what if stock prices fall and you can't sell it, or you sell it for a quarter of what you bought it for? Then what happens? Then you can't pay your loan back.
You default on the loan.
Right. And in those days, you and I remember, all our listeners probably remember what happened in 2008 when banks were very shaky. And such and such bank is too big to fail. The federal government is not going to let this bank fail, because if you have too many more bank failures, it's not that housing prices would just dip, they would crash. And so enough people believed that the federal government had the power and the money and the resources to prevent a bank from collapsing and closing, even though they were very unwise. Back in those days, I'll give you a personal story. Back in 2008, the bank that we dealt with here, one of the banks in Northern Michigan, continually sent us letters, says, "Hey, you've got tens of thousands of dollars of credit. You want to borrow money? Borrow money." They were really encouraging us to borrow money, and they were loaning money to everybody. Bad credit, no credit, no credit, no problem. And they were loaning money out. But then when the housing market dipped or crashed, those banks, they were in danger of being in default. And lots of people were in default because they borrowed too much money. And they thought that their house would continually go up in value. So buying on the margin or speculation. By the way, this has happened in other times. This happened in the Panic of 1837. When Van Buren was president, there's been other panics like the Great Depression, like the stock market crash, but none that were so deep and lasted so long. But you have to be smart on this. You can't borrow money forever. And I would just say this, and we've talked about the Federal Reserve and all this. Listen, everybody, I know we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation now, talking about 2026, but rest assured, the federal government doesn't have the money to bail out every bank in the United States. The money is not there. The federal government itself is in deep debt. If we have another panic, where are they going to get the money? They're just going to have what they call now a quantitative easing. They're going to push some button in some computer somewhere and just put more money out to the Fed, and it's going to give it to the 12 regional banks, and they're just going to start loaning money out. That does not exist. It's not backed up by any gold or silver. And they're just going to push massive inflation. They're saying that we'll never have anything like this again. Well, maybe. I doubt it, though, because economies flow. They ebb and they flow. And so people were buying on the margin. Then when the banks called their loan, and then people could not pay it back. Houses were taken back by the bank. They were foreclosed upon. And banks, by the way, closed. And other banks were on the verge of closing. And we had something that was called a run on banks or a bank run. Back in these days, if you saw a lot of people going to the bank in the early 30s, you'd want to get to the head of them and get your money out of the bank before the bank closes. Because if the bank collapses, your money's gone. There's no federal government guaranteeing any of your money. Now, again, we have, federal government guarantees that your money is safe. Okay, all right, I suppose. But I'm just telling you that the United States federal government is itself in debt. It cannot bail out every bank in the country. Maybe bail out 10%. I'm not even sure they can bail that many out. What's holding us together today, and this is no criticism of President Trump more than President Biden, Obama, George W. Bush, Clinton, let's just keep going backward. We have been in the business of borrowing money since FDR. That is the way it is. So you have
let me stop you on that point. What did we do before that, before FDR, before the proposed Great Society and all the things that government was going to do for us? How did our country operate, Pastor Shedfield, before FDR, before we start borrowing money?
Well, we've always borrowed money to come into wars. George Washington said that. You have to borrow money.
Oh, yeah, but we paid it back.
Yes, exactly. It started in earnest with FDR. And before that is, hey, everybody, you're on your own. I was trying to teach this to junior hires. If there is a flood in Florida, what does everybody expect? There's a flood in Florida or a hurricane. Everybody expects the federal government to move in and help. If there's that is the way it is. If there's an ice storm in the tip of the Met in Michigan, like we had about a year ago, everybody expects government help. We expect the government to help. We didn't expect that 100 years ago. Nope. Not like that. We expected, you're getting old. Oh, okay. Well, then if you got some retirement plans, everybody had their own plans. Now the government, 1935, we initiated Social Security. That's our plan, at least part of our plan. Everybody, we turned to government. And by the way, that is so deep-seated, so deeply rooted, There's no going back. I can't imagine us going back. Remember, George W. Bush wanted to try to some measure privatize Social Security and create some flexibility in Social Security so it would be a better system. And man, it cost the Republicans. You better not touch, because everybody our age said, "Don't touch my Social Security. I paid into that. That's my money." By the way, it used to be back in when it first started, you'd pay a little bit in, you get a lot out. Now you're going to pay and then for a while you'd pay a lot in and a lot out, and you get a lot out. Now you're paid a lot in, you're probably not going to get it out. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but it is a pyramid scheme. At least we got money sitting in the Social Security system that's sitting there just ready to be paid out to the people that earned their Social Security, right? Wrong. Obviously, we have no money. There is no money. It's all built on trust. We think it's going to be there. So it's government. We turn to government. Now, when the crash happened, soup lines formed. The unemployment went up to 25%. The farmers were in a world of hurt. The thing out there in the Great Plains called the Dust Bowl, they weren't doing well. And then there was a drought, and it went from bad to worse for the farmers. People packed up all their goods on a truck and moved to California or to wherever they could go just to have a place to live, anything. There was a man in my church, Mr. Wheeler, who passed away a couple of years ago now. He at 103, he was from Harbor Springs. A lot of our listeners I know would know him. He said that his family owned a store in the Midwest, and they lost their store, lost everything, went to Mississippi, and lived in a tent for about 3 years. They drove to, why Mississippi? They had to find, go drive somewhere where it's warm.
Right.
And that's what you did. And then you hoped you could sell apples, do something that you would simply survive. And that's what happened. I mean, there are a lot of things happened in this period of time. After World War II, the federal government promised all World War, after World War I, promised World War I doughboys and soldiers, you're going to get bonus. They went to Washington, D.C. and camped out and says, we want our money. We're starving to death. And Douglas MacArthur had to go in there with tanks and basically run them out. And during this time, up until the election of 1932, it was all blamed on Herbert Hoover. He was trying to help where he could, but couldn't do much. Couldn't do much. And so that gave to the rise of the governor of New York, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who ran for president in 1932. He's going to give a new deal to the American people. He won in a landslide, which was like 57% of the vote. And he said, I'm going to make a new deal. And when he gets elected, he's going to start doing whatever it takes, or what he thought, whatever it takes, to end this depression. Federal government is going to get involved. And they did. He created so many different agencies. One of the first things he did is call for a bank holiday. That meant banks, you cannot, don't open up. Take a holiday because we can't let you collapse.
Right. We're going to talk about those agencies.